dog roams the neighborhood unleashed, intimidating everyone. Negotiations between a teachers' union and a local government have been at a standstill for a month, forcing children to miss days from school. An American naval vessel has been bombed off the coast of Cuba, and war calls are imminent. Fact or fiction? These are all imaginary examples of a very real force within our society, conflict. Conflict is a life source. A certain amount of it is needed in order to grow. Too much of it, however, can harm. I'm Michelle LeSaint Montgomery for George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. A new field has emerged within the last 50 years that studies the nature of conflict and conflict behavior at the interpersonal, intergroup, and international levels. The term is referred to as conflict resolution, and this fall, George Mason University will begin its Master of Science program in conflict resolution. With me today to discuss the program is Dr. Dennis Sandoli for the George Mason University Center for Conflict Resolution. Dr. Sandoli, is there a perfect alternative to violence in our society?
The absence of physical violence, the absence of mugging, the absence of war, the absence of assassination, the absence of racism, sexism, which is to say the absence of institutional, structural violence, the kinds of violence that's hard to see unless you're on the receiving end. And even then, you might be happy about it, hence the so-called happy slave phenomenon, the happy traditional housewife phenomenon, etc. Ideal, perfect alternatives to violence. We can contemplate such systems of human environments, but whether or not we can reach those, whether or not we can get to those, whether or not we can create those and then maintain them is another point. And I think one of the ways to try to achieve these maybe imperfect alternatives to violence, and I say imperfect because nothing will ever be perfect, one of the ways to achieve these is through a two-pronged approach, one of which is to try to change our beliefs and values, the way we think about the world around us, and secondly, to, at the same time, try to create alternative institutional structures, alternative political, social, economic systems which reflect these new beliefs and values, that we have not just the new thinking but also the new institutions which reflect the thinking, operating at the same time, hopefully reinforcing each other.
What has been the traditional approach towards solving a problem? Hasn't it been violence in the past?
Well, I think a lot of people would say, oh no, our approach to solving conflicts is relatively sophisticated, etc. We use diplomacy. But what happens is people tend to get angry. They tend to get frustrated. In other words, what I would call their suppressed animal nature, if you will, pops out. And in the process of it popping out, they tend to behave in ways other than those they themselves would prefer not to behave in. And as a consequence of frustration playing itself out and anger motivating persons to do things they would prefer not to do, they tend to behave in aggressive, violent ways, violence being an intense, very intense form of aggression. And people get hurt, and they themselves might get hurt. And there are all sorts of costs involved, not just financial, economic costs. There are social costs. There are political costs. There are memory costs. To this day, many people refuse to admit that a Holocaust against Jewish people was perpetrated in Europe during World War II. To this day, there are people who are unwilling to admit that the Palestinians are going through their own diaspora. To this day, there are people unwilling to admit that here in our own country, the United States of America, the American Indian has suffered unspeakable crimes. There are many people who refuse to accept this, even those who didn't participate in these things. I myself did not participate in these things against the American Indian, against the Jew, against the Palestinian, yet I may have difficulty in 1982 talking about these unspeakable crimes because they were committed by people I might identify and associate with. So yes, you're right. By and large, there is a tendency to call out the Marines, which is my metaphor for the use of violence. And that usually happens when we get frustrated and angry. Although there are occasions where violence has been institutionalized. You can be violent without getting angry. Really because you have institutional structures already in existence. Police departments, armed forces, for instance, employ personnel who can articulate violence without being angry at the persons against whom they articulate and prosecute the violence.
How does conflict resolution fit into this and what George Mason is about to propose?
Well, the Master of Science degree program in conflict management, which is about to be launched here, 2-year full-time program, what does it represent? It represents one of these alternatives we started out talking about, not perfect perhaps, but imperfect, but still an alternative to violence. The objective is to give people, those who are interested, and perhaps many should be interested because we're surrounded by conflict and therefore the potential of aggression and violence, to give them an alternative set of skills, an alternative set of beliefs and values or opportunities for developing new beliefs and values and attitudes toward human interaction, particularly human conflict, and how to respond to human conflict and how to, if not prevent it from happening, once it does happen, to contain it a bit and try to work toward resolution, if you will. And your question is, what does conflict resolution mean? In contradistinction to what we've been talking about, it means making the outcomes of conflict situations less costly than they have been. One of the things that happens when violence is employed is that there may be a loser. In extreme terms, there may very definitely be a loser. People may get killed. There are lots of losers in Lebanon, it seems to me. I would argue, including the Israelis, their image worldwide, their reputation as a democratic, as a humanistic peoples, I think, has suffered. The Americans perhaps have suffered a bit. The Palestinians have suffered. Everyone has suffered. Similarly, if we were to have a nuclear war, there'd be lots of violence and lots of losers, not just one. But in traditional terms, people, when they use violence, tend to think they're going to, or they stand a chance of winning if they employ violence. This is not consciously thought out, but it seems to underlie why they're violent. And the other party may lose. But this doesn't seem to happen anymore. We have, as I suggest, lots of losers. And this suggests costs to all concerned. And it also suggests that when you use violence, one of the costs is that you merely suppress the conflict. You don't solve it. In other words, it's going to be a survivor. There's going to be a friend of the target of your aggression. Even if you were to kill everyone in a tribe or a certain neighborhood or a certain country, there would be someone who didn't like it who would come back to haunt you. And one of the things I've been thinking about recently is what I call the Turkish-Armenian syndrome. We have there are people called Armenians. There's no country called Armenia in a sense of a sovereign nation state. Parts of it are in Turkey, parts of it or parts of where it would be are in Turkey and Soviet Union. But there are Armenians, just like there were Palestinians and still are Palestinians. And before Israel, there were Jews, people who are effectively representatives of a nation. And quite a few Armenians, or at least there are Armenians, some of whom are American citizens, some of whom are teenagers in their early 20s who are participating in acts of guerrilla warfare, if you will, against Turkish diplomats worldwide. Now, what are the Armenian persons responding to? Something that apparently happened in 1915 when apparently 1.5 million Armenians were massacred by the Turks. That's a long time ago. And yet there are these people who obviously don't remember it because they weren't alive then. But by virtue of their association with what it means to be an Armenian, they can experience anger, they can experience frustration, just like there are Jewish people who are not in Auschwitz who can experience the Holocaust vicariously. And I would argue there are going to be lots of Palestinians growing up who can experience what's been going on in West Beirut. And all that involves costs.
Conflict resolution has only evolved within the last 50 years or so. What kind of student do you think would be interested in this kind of program? It's so new.
It's interesting that it is so new, and this just goes to suggest, goes to show how long we've been using the means of violence, perhaps part of our primeval, pre-Renaissance men and women nature. It is new, and it's even less than 50 years old. It's within the last 20, 25 years. It's grown out of conflict analysis, peace research, types of fields in the social sciences, response to the nuclear bomb type of nightmare we've been living with since 1945. It's new, and as I was mentioning before, there are lots of people who are surrounded by conflict who professionally would be well advised to take note of these new techniques which have been developing in the last 25 years. What kinds of people? I would think military professionals, I would think police professionals, I would think diplomats, I would think prison workers, I would think social workers, I would think labor union management representatives, I would think race relations, community relations, family relations workers, I would think marriage counselors, lots of people, and including lawyers. Not too long ago, Warren Burger, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, suggested when speaking before the American Bar Association that the courts are blocked up, the courts are years behind. America has become one of the most litigation-oriented nations on the face of the map. We sue rather quickly in this country. We sue rather often in this country. There are lots of court cases, criminal and civil. There's got to be an alternative to the use of litigation, is Warren Burger's message, and apparently this is something he's pursuing. There's got to be something for lawyers to do before they get to court. Now, one of the things lawyers can do before they get to court is to involve themselves in some kind of conflict management process. So there's lots of people, and I think particularly with the police, we perhaps have the extreme example of a need for the means of nonviolence. I think most of us would assume that the policeman of all of us, even more so than a soldier, is going to be called upon most often to employ the most extreme kinds of coercion. And here again, I take pride in referring to my own personal experience in this regard, as well as my own school learning, if you will. Even the police can use this, and I think this is well brought out by recent events in Montgomery County, where we had this IBM building siege. You'll recall a gentleman who lost a job, crashed his car through the doors, went in there on a shooting spree and killed a few people, I think three. Well, the Montgomery Police Department has something called an Emergency Response Team, ERT, which was written up in a Washington Post. What this involves is conflict management, conflict resolution, conflict intervention, conflict management leading to conflict resolution. They talked the man out. They talked the man into surrendering. Rather than storming the Bastille, if you will, with the flamethrowers and the tanks and the machine guns, they talked him out, thereby preventing further bloodshed. The Hanafi Muslim takeover of B'nai B'rith a couple years back in Washington involved three ambassadors from Arab nations talking to the Hanafi Muslim representatives into surrendering.
You've mentioned a number of different areas, and I take it that this program is multidisciplinary.
Yes, sociology, anthropology, political science, economics, history, communications, biology. We have to know something about the nature of the beast, human nature, ourselves. We are our own worst enemy, and we have met him and her, and we have to come to terms with him and her, finally.
Well, we've run out of time. Thank you, Dr. Sandoli, for being on Frankly Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Gene Hyde. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassane Montgomery for George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.